and welcome to another episode of This Week in Wealth. I'm Alex Steger, Director of Editorial at CityWire USA, and I'm joined pretty much as ever by Ian Wenick, CityWire RIA Editor. Ian, good to have you. How are you?
Yeah, we're really happy to be here. Sorry, I'm really happy to be here. I've been watching a lot of Pluribus recently.
Is that a wee situation?
Yes,
that,
yes. No spoilers.
I haven't seen any of it. It's on Apple, right? It's a former Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul people who also worked on X-Files, didn't he, I believe, before?
Yes, originally X-Files.
Is it more in that vein? It's sort of more sort of futuristic, dystopian?
You'll have to watch for yourself. Episode 3 will have dropped by the time this episode is out tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Well, something to sort of leave the readers hanging on. But the we is kind of right, because there is more than one of you here, I suppose. We're also joined, again, second week in a row, making up for lost time, by Sam Bojarski, senior reporter on CityWire RAA. Sam, good to have you back.
Yeah, good to be back here again. I'm almost fully recovered from the Charles Schwab conference and a ripping performance by Keith Urban on the final night.
Well, and you did also, as we informed our readers week before, you did also run the marathon shortly before going to Schwab, if I got my timelines right.
I did, yeah, a couple of days before. Yeah,
in a marathon. So in a way, two marathons in one day. In one week.
Yeah.
Excellent. Any TV recommendations before we get into the real business?
TV recommendations?
Well, after Ian's teed up. I don't know. How'd you say that out loud again?
How do I teed up what?
The show. How'd you say that again?
Oh, Pluribus.
Pluribus. Can you top that? Anything else you're watching?
I can't top that, no.
Just Housewives.
Been too busy.
Assume it's Housewives then, listener. Yeah. Fair enough. All right. Well, look. Fun as it is, we are not here to talk about TV. We are instead here, obviously, to talk about the RAA business and what's been going on there in the last 7 days. And we're going to start with a story which you've both covered at various points, Sam, most recently. And it's about Wealthspire, which I think we can sort of say is now quietly become one of the largest wealth businesses around, $580 billion. And sometimes I think when we're writing about these things, we get a bit immune to the size of the figures involved. And we'll come on to this because it's not just one single pure play sort of financial advice, wealth-focused business. There's a lot more going on there. But regardless, that is, you know, that's big. That's a, you know, you could probably be a public listed asset manager with that kind of money. So not small. It's a product of a bunch of mergers and acquisitions and... What's the opposite of an acquisition, a reacquisition, or even a deacquisition, perhaps? We'll talk about all that. But it's in the news this week, Sam, because you caught up with the sort of new-ish CEO of this new-ish entity at the aforementioned Schwab conference. So that's Mike Lemina. So do you want to kick us off, I suppose, with the latest news being about kind of the C-suite, but also how he came to be the CEO of this absolutely ginormous sort of multifaceted wealth business?
Yeah, certainly. So the latest news is that new look Wealthspire business has finally taken shape. Lemina talked to me about their new C-suite. They have a CFO, a general counsel, both from Wealthspire's former parent, NFP. And then they've retained Wealthspire's chief marketing officer, Angela Giambetti. She's been there for a couple years. And their new CIO is this fellow named Brad Long, who was at a firm called Fiduciant, which was also formerly part of NFP, as was Wealthspire.
Okay, so I think at this point we're going to have to unpack how this... I don't want to use the word Frankenstein because that's unfair. And also technically it should be Frankenstein's monster. But it's also, you know, it's sort of negative connotations, aren't there? But how did this all come to be? And I feel, Ian Wenick, this is a specialist subject for you, sort of unpacking the corporate structure and acquisition timeline of an RAA business. So can we go back to the beginning?
There are a lot of brand names here. So this is going to, I feel like we should have like some sort of infographic flowchart, but it can't really, it doesn't work in podcasts.
This is an audio format, but I suppose if you're listening at home, perhaps get your preferred AI bot to start taking notes now.
So what is now Wealthspire goes all the way back to, well, one, you have on the traditional wealth side, you had two RAAs. You had Sontag Advisory and Prof. and Rothschild. Okay. They merged.
The first of those, that's where Mike Lemina was at the beginning of this journey. He was at I can struggle to say this in the practice.
How Bronfen Rothschild.
Yeah,
that's what he was at Hightower before that.
Okay.
So those merged and that became Wealthspire Advisors. And that entity, Sontag, was originally owned by NFP, which is an insurance brokerage business that was owned by private equity firm Madison Dearborn Partners.
Okay, so we've got some of our key characters in play already now. Okay.
Madison Dearborn, through NFP, simultaneously owned a large investment consulting business known as Fiducian.
Fiducian, and that's where Brad Long, CIO, that's where he was, how he comes into this picture.
Okay. And so those two entities, along with there's a Canadian entity, there's another retirement entity, those operated side by side as independent brand entities under the NFP umbrella.
Okay, but they were sort of NFP's wealth businesses.
Yes, that's correct.
So sort of the merged RIA business, this outsourced investment consultant business, a retirement sort of solutions type business, and something in Canada. So is it four?
Yeah, that's four correct.
Okay, all right.
Then a couple of years ago, Madison Dearborn sold NFP, all of NFP, including all his underlying wealth assets, to Aon, which is a, as you know, especially our UK bosses know, massive insurance professional services business, London, Chicago, global company. And then a couple of months ago, we first broke that Aon was exploring a sale of a lot of those legacy NFP wealth assets. And surprise, surprise, here comes Madison Dearborn Partners in to buy back the wealth assets that it sold to Aon and is now uniting all of it under the Wealthspire, drop the advisors, brand name.
Yeah, okay. Well, just one name now, Wealthspire, like a sort of like a sort of Prince Madonna situation.
Seal
as well, also a good option. Yeah, yeah, good. And there's other ones, but let's leave it there before we start quoting Superbad, because I think that's just too much of a tangent. So some of NFP remains, some of the sort of insurance side of it remains at Aon, but effectively all these wealth assets that had sort of previously been owned by NFP via Madison Dearborn come back to Madison Dearborn, but are no longer branded as NFP and instead are now branded as Wealthspire. But it's effectively those same four businesses. So the sort of what were the two RAAs, what was Fiducian, and this retirement business and whatever was going on in Canada.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you for bearing with me, Ian, Sam, and the listener as I figure this out. All right, so that all happened. It's massive. And then, Sam, from what you're saying, though, so the winners is the wrong word, but the people at the top of that, it doesn't seem to be, you know, the people from, well, it largely seems to be Mike and the people from that sort of wealth business are obviously, perhaps unsurprisingly, now running a much, much bigger, multifaceted wealth business than they were before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And what did he, you caught up with him on the sidelines of Schwab beyond sort of talking about, you know, who was doing what? Did he, I don't know, give much more color about what's going on, what the process has been like, what they might do next?
Yeah. So, I mean, he gave some background on kind of like why these wealth assets were eventually resold to Madison Dearborn.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's ask that question. Because, I mean, it was 2 years they were Aon for before?
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct.
It's not the longest amount of time in the world.
Right. Yeah. So when Aon acquired NFP, basically they were intent on growing the middle market insurance business at NFP. You know, not quite an ideal situation for the wealth management businesses. And I think Lamina and the rest of the wealth management execs within NFP kind of realized this, as did, you know, other folks at Aon and NFP. They kind of got together and, you know, decided that the best, you know, the best way forward was to sell the wealth assets to an outside buyer. And that process began early this year and eventually culminated, you know, around September.
And we had originally reported that not to sort of do us down in any way, because we're great, but our original reporting was not that was not necessarily that Aon was going to sell the whole of the wealth assets that it had acquired, but we thought it was going to sell.
We knew at least that Wealthspire Advisors was on the block at a bare minimum.
Which is the bit that we probably care about the most.
Yes, that's correct.
All right, well, okay.
And they did sell a significant majority of them, but I think NFP does still have some wealth assets left in house.
At Aon?
At Aon, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So it's not the entire paper, but it's the bits that we certainly care about the most here. All right. So they had those discussions. And then Madison Dearborn. I mean, again, that's kind. It's kind of funny, right? Isn't it? Because they sold it just 2 years ago and then bought it back again. Did he sort of elucidate at all on sort of how they came to be back in the pitch? Other than I guess they knew the assets and the people very well.
Yeah, it was familiar. Yeah, I mean, it was a familiar transaction. It made perfect sense for all the parties involved to go back.
Okay. And Ian, again, this feels like a sort of very, very sort of Wenig subject here. But I mean, what, if anything, does this tell us about, you know, state of play and sort of, you know, in the M&A world, I don't know, around sort of who you should be selling to or, you know, what can we read into the fact that there was this very sort of quick in and out?
Well, I think that it just kind of shows, I mean, if you're, and we see this happen a lot with accounting firms, where if you're a business that just happens to own a wealth management operation that's not part of your core functionality, these things throw off so much cash and they're so valuable, why not sell it? So if you're Aon, I mean, they just got basically a $2.7 billion rebate on their $13.4 billion acquisition of the insurance assets. If you think of it that way, it makes a lot of sense. And if you're Madison Dearborn, as we've discussed before, the traditional PE thesis, you revolve around holding these businesses as cash flow generating assets, using multiple arbitrage and leverage to kind of juice their returns a little bit, find incremental sub-acquisitions, and then you can sell it to another buyer, hold it and roll it into a continuation vehicle and just keep taking the distributions that come off as long as the market does fine. So it makes total logical sense for both sides, even if it kind of looks awkward, to do a deal like this so quickly.
Yeah, it's the speed, isn't it? It's the speed and the fact it sort of went back to the person that bought it before that kind of makes it look a little bit sort of, you know, well, sort of ill thought out perhaps from two sides. Because obviously what you could have done is, if you were Aon, just not buy that part of the business. And if you were Madison Dearborn, just not sell that part of the business. But maybe it's more complicated than that. Who are we to pass judgment? But we will anyway. Okay, what else do we need to know about this? I asked you a bunch of questions, then we went down one rabbit hole. So, yeah, anything on sort of what next?
Well, what next? Yeah, I mean, the business is going to continue to focus on acquisitions. I mean, WellSpire has been a perennial player in the M&A markets in recent years. So they're going to, you know, continue to be, you know, what Lamina said, but, you know, thoughtful, you know, might not be the most frequent acquirer around, but, you know, they are still going to be out there acquiring RIAs. They have a pretty compelling proposition now with, you know, with a retirement business in house. They have the family office services to go after those like ultra high net worth clients. So
yeah, they've got an outsourcing business, and then they've got the core RIA business, and I guess they've got a big PE sponsor who, you know, is going to want, to your point, Ian, going to want to see them grow, so that perhaps they could do something again down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you told me 3 to 4 years ago that we're writing about Madison Dearborn starting a process for WellSpire Advisors, WellSpire nearing $1 trillion in assets, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, and that's so interesting when we think back to, you know, not that long ago when it was Bronfman, if I can say that rightly, Rothschild, and I don't know how big it was when we were first writing about it, but it's like a few billion dollars, you know, a big and successful and, you know, not to play it down, notable RIA, but still, you know, nothing compared to what it is today. We'll keep our eyes on that. Thank you both very much indeed. So we're going to move on to the second item on our agenda today, which is also another, frankly, sort of massive wealth business that has grown by some, well, sort of, I was going to say something derogatory, but I mean, I'm going to try and not. I don't know, some sort of complicated, shall we say, sort of merger type situation. Anyway, I butchered the intro. We're going to talk about Ulti Global, or the firm that we used to call Tiedemann's, right?
Ian? Yes, that's correct.
Ian, I suppose, again, so Tiedemann, or what do we have to call it? We have to call it Ulti now.
Ulti Global, yes.
Okay, Ulti Global, right, for, yep. Whatever, we'll call it that now. So nowadays, an $89 billion, largely wealth management business, although it's got some other bits to its business, and that's germane to this conversation. It's publicly traded. And Ian, before we get into sort of the most recent thing, how did it come to be and how did it come to be that big?
Yeah, so Ulti Global was the consequence of one of the biggest mergers that we've ever covered, which was a SPAC deal. Who remembers SPACs? They're back in POG form. So it was a deal between a...
They never went away.
It was a deal between a SPAC known as Cartesian Growth Corp., Tiedemann Advisors, a large New York City ultra-high-net-worth-focused RA, and then Alvarium Investment, which is a British alternative asset manager. You just kind of call it a generic money manager if you want to.
Okay, so Cartesian was the SPAC. That was the shell vehicle, effectively.
Yes.
Okay.
That was the blank check company, basically. And then the three of these businesses revealed their deal to merge together in September of 21. And then it took more than a year for that transaction to close. There were a bunch of delays due to the decline in the equity markets. And it finally went public in January 2023. And since then, the stock, I mean, there's an initial spike in the beginning, but shares now, I think, are down north of 57% from the first offering. So they're underwater relative to the original SPAC offering price of $10 a share. They had some issues, some of the legacy Alvarium holdings. There is an international real estate business that was a loss generator that they're starting to wind down. They took a large impairment charge on a merger arbitrage fund that was kind of inherited from Alvarium that impacted their earnings. And I mean, they delayed the report of their third quarter earnings by 2 days this week as well.
Okay, so this is you've sort of seamlessly segued into why we're talking about them today, which is that they put out their, as a publicly listed company, they put out their Q3 earnings this week after a couple of days delay, which I don't know, who knows whether that's a good thing or a bad thing to delay your earnings, but you don't see it that often. And as you alluded to there, we already knew because they'd reported it before that they were divesting from this sort of troubled real estate investment management business that they had. It seems there was also some kind of issue in its this arbitrage fund that it also ran. And these both were in the sort of Alvarium side of it. So this was, which I guess just from the sounds of it, was a more multifaceted business than the sort of straightforward wealth management business that Tiedemann ran.
Yes, exactly. A lot of more kind of esoteric kind of, more esoteric holdings.
Okay. So a couple of issues there. Otherwise, though, just before we get into what the company might be doing, can we go over anything else interesting for the Q3 earnings? What's the general health of this business?
So they reported on this is going by generally accepted accounting principles, a net loss of around $107 million for the quarter. With adjustments, they made about $1 million. They had about $6 million in adjusted EBITDA, and they had a profit margin of about 11%. And you can kind of put that in context with the 30%+ margin, sometimes 40%+ we've seen with some of those private RAs that have gone through the syndicated debt markets to raise capital.
Okay, yeah. So we have some insight into those financials because, as you say, they put out presentations to the debt market, and we've seen those. So where does this leave the company? Because I think what we haven't spoken about yet is the story that we reported. I'm going to say in the summer generically because I can't remember the month, but you reported that they were possibly looking to just go private, basically, and sort of find a buyer.
Yes, that they are. They retained JP Morgan early in the summer. We report exclusively, and they are looking to find some form of take private transaction. And in the weeks and months since, Alti Global Management, including CEO Michael Tiedemann, have been asked about strategic divestitures, strategic options the company's evaluating. They refuse to really kind of confirm or deny anything that's happening. But it makes sense given that they're a public company.
Okay, so we'll come on to the whole public company thing and whether that's a good place for wealth firms to be. I think we sort of know the answer, but we'll talk about it anyway. Before we get to that, then they were asked about this in the Q3 earnings. And they
really demurred. I mean, they said there's nothing we can really comment on at this time. They didn't deny or confirm anything. I mean, basically, you know how with sometimes with relationships, we talk about gray rocking as opposed to ghosting, where you give as little details as possible.
I don't know about that. What is this? Is this a text thing that you do? What is gray rocking?
Gray rocking, yes. It's when you're dealing with someone toxic and you give as little of as little emotion as possible for the manipulator to manipulate you with. So you just answer short, factual questions, adding as little color as possible. You're basically like an Easter Island stone face.
Okay. All right. This is good information to learn and very good advice, I suppose. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So you are accusing, Ian Wenick accuses Michael Tiedemann of gray walking. No. Okay. But that's what they did. They sort of,
They basically stalled.
Yeah, played with a straight bat, you might say in the UK if you're a cricket fan. Okay, well, that brings us on very nicely in then to, I suppose, if our reporting was accurate, which I think we obviously assumed it was, otherwise we wouldn't have published it. And if it comes to pass, which may or may not happen because, you know, we can't control that part of things. But if it does, then could that be another kind of blow to the idea of the public wealth management business? You know, I think we've talked about this before, but there aren't very many publicly listed pure play wealth management businesses. And where they have existed before, they haven't always stayed on the public markets.
Yeah, I mean, there's very few. I mean, there's Silvercrest Asset Management Group, which has basically just flown totally under the radar as a microcap stock for several years. I mean, I don't have ever even written a story about Silvercrest.
Sounds like you might be thinking about it.
Yeah, maybe one day. But, you know, this business is kind of unique in that you have, I think, the legacy baggage of both the SPAC and now being attached to this alts business. So it makes sense there's a drag on margins and the multiple might not be the same. But what I think is interesting is, you know, look at some of their backers, and that could give you a clue as to what the ultimate fate for a company like Altie might be, which is that they're have backing from Allianz, large insurance firm.
But Allianz is like venture.
Yes, through Allianz X. Like, yeah. They're backed by Carl Heikenberg, frequently mentioned on the show.
Last week? Did we talk about
Carl? We did talk about Carl last week.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Because they raised $2 billion. He has a board observer position.
$2 billion?
He's raising $2 billion, yeah. And then what's interesting is that, and this hasn't really come up much, is that Altie actually has Qatari backing through a family office known as El Wadi, which is the family office, I believe, one of the directors is Sheikh Jassim Abdulaziz Al Thani. So they have, you know, sovereign backing as well. And we've talked about that before with Mubadala and Corian, that is an option on the table, that these wealthy sovereigns, it makes sense because they generate so much cash.
Okay, yeah. So they could, so you're sort of what implying that one of those backers could take a larger position or indeed would want some sort of capital event anyway down the line.
Yeah, if you told me, you know, I have no direct knowledge of this, so this is not me reporting, this is us, as you like to say, idly speculating.
Not idle, it's active, yes. But yeah.
You know, if you told me a year down the line that Allianz acquired this company or El Wadi acquired it, yeah, I'd believe that. It wouldn't shock me. Those are logical destinations.
Okay, but in the meantime, yeah, we basically keep our eyes on it. We see what happens. And so they have fully now divested that sort of perhaps slightly troublesome, underperforming.
I believe that's shutting down by 2027.
Okay, so that one goes. There might be other parts of that that they could divest, and then there also then could be some sort of broader,
exactly,
broader sale on the line. Okay, but very, very interesting. Something again to keep an eye on. Well, look, thank you both. I suppose, was there anything else that we were going to discuss today? Have I managed to forget a third item, or is this, like, you know, are we two and out?
That depends. You want to talk about more TV?
About more TV? I'm always happy to talk about TV. Yeah. What else? What else are you watching?
Chair Company.
Chair. I haven't seen that. Tim Robinson. I obviously like him. Good.
I almost done with my King of the Hill full series watch through.
Okay.
This is why people subscribe.
This is what we resort to when there's no sports on that we want. Basically, when there's no baseball on to talk about.
No one wants to hear about the Penn Quakers or who I'd hire as the Giants coach.
I'm sure they do, but let's assume that maybe it's not what they tuned in for. Well, look, thank you both very much. I think it's really interesting. I suppose if we're trying to sort of draw some trends here, it's, you know, obviously the sort of the M&A machine rolls on. Bigger isn't always better, but sometimes it can be. I think on that note, though, we could probably wrap up. So, Sam, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Great to have you.
Great to be here, as always.
Glad you've recovered from both Schwab and the marathon. Ian, always a pleasure. And listener, you as well. So thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll be back again very soon for another episode of This Week in Wealth.